Hello, this is Fizz at Finishing.com, the homepage of the finishing industry. Here is parts 5 and 6 of The Lost Art of Tin Nickel Plating by Lou Morin.
Yes, continue. Yes, I kept talking about engineering uses, but the system was busy all day long. There are parts that had deep solder cups, for instance, that needed to wet with the solder as well as corrosion resistance. That tin nickel was ideal for that. Sliding, such as vibrator bowls. No, not the bowls. They're aluminum die cast, and they used to electroless nickel plate those. But all the ways and guides and whatever, nickel, tin nickel. And it was easy to keep clean, didn't discolor tin-plated parts, black. And everything was slide and slide. Parts for water meters, whole water meters, in fact. A lot of fishing reel parts, particularly salt water. Just ideal. Boat hardware, of course, but since I was not a decorative shop, would do only specials for people. And I saw to it there was a special by overcharging. I didn't want to find myself with busy buffing departments. On big decorative parts, like the fellows in the shop would do the hood ornaments and whatever, fanning, a little bit of lime on a open weave buffing wheel. Just touch it. And all the static, of course, would be off with that. But it would bring out the color so that time of day meant so much. Late in the afternoon, where the rays of the sun are a little longer, would be a beautiful pink color. Really nice. Fingerprint like crazy, though. Remember that when it comes to electronics. Freshly plated, if you don't want to have to do a solve and clean, then use cotton gloves. However, would take advantage of the wax formulations, and I mean just molecular layers, truly very dilute, because it would be not just temporary shield against the much more corrosive perspiration stains, but also acts as a moderate flux, don't they? Especially the carnauba waxes. Oh, in that regard, there'd be, for instance, a part that I had for my own use. Used to do a lot of continuous coil plating, and from the fluoroborate system, making contact to anodes is a pain in the tail. So I'd buy the ordinary drilled and tapped. You remember 3/8-16, is it? But I had a brass terminal made that consisted of, what the heck was it, about inch square stock, one half of it 3/8-16. Turned a screw, and the other half just a socket hole. I would take my vinyl insulated welding cable, yes, the vinyl one, and trim the line very cleanly. Solder dip the end of the wire, the welding cable. That would go in, into the throat, the deep hole part of the tin nickel plated brass piece. Apply a torch, and as soon as the solder melted, push the cable in so that the vinyl, neoprene jacket, whatever it was firm against the end. Great. Now what I would do is put simple rack coating touch-up vinyl on that, like a masking material. And I would terminate in fluoroborate solutions under the solutions. That is saying one hell of a mouthful. What would happen, of course, is that the final coating was imperfect, little holes, little pores in it. And the tin nickel gave me corrosion resistance that would last till the next change of anodes. Sometimes there would be some local attack, but I never lost it all, and I never lost my contact. And that way, too, strangely, never attacked the welding cable copper. I don't know of any plating that would form that shore, except maybe platinum. And it'd take a hell of a lot more than a couple of microns of platinum there. And one of the reasons the tin nickel isn't more popular is that this simply does nothing for a vendor to sell. Oh, there have been some claimed brighteners, which I don't believe. First of all, they're not necessary if you're wise enough to not use the sodium fluoride. And nothing for them to sell. So you're on your own, aren't you? And also, the literature on performance of the tin nickel, I just don't believe it because the parameters of the solutions are way off. The solution, yeah. Tin chloride is 40 ounces per gallon. And the nickel chloride is 40 ounces per gallon. And tin chloride is 6.5 ounces. Well, I would make a solution adjustment when I drifted to less than 10% of that. I wouldn't permit the solution to the original formulation to drift below 10% of the numbers I just gave you. Oh, it's a little more work, and you got to do it more often, but that's the way to do it. Also, the ammonium bifluoride is 7.5 ounces per gallon, but let me warn you about something. Ammonium bifluoride is a flake, and you get it in paper bags, 50-pound bags. But remember that 1 pound of ammonium bifluoride is 0.5 pound of hydrofluoric acid. Now, I got hurt with hydrofluoric acid 50 years ago, and boy, do I remember. It's one of those insidious acids where if you got it on you, you can't tell. It feels like water. Oh, yeah? Wait a couple hours. And then, my God, you can't stop the thing. The burn that I got was strictly from the fumes. Well, it was a concentrated hydrofluoric, but it was strictly the fumes condensing on the skin of my hands. And not even being aware that there was some there. And a couple hours later, oh boy, it began to sting. And in my years, when I got burnt, the remedy, the cure, was sheep suet. Now, if you want a your hands bandaged with sheep suet, at the end of the day, it became a little raunchy. Be careless. But actually, as ammonia bifluoride, it's safety salt. That's the nickname for it, trade name for it. So that means that as far as the solution is concerned, and yes, I've had occasion to get splashed, what you do is flush with water, like you do with any mineral acid. It's the thing to do. Flush with water. Now, the recommendations are to carbon filter and voltage and everything. Don't do any of that stuff. Yeah, I used the liquid nickel chloride. It's already been filtered as I got it, and I know what the analysis is, 5 gallon cubes. So that eliminates the need there. The tin chloride is always just clean enough. The ammonium bifluoride is also. And when you finish with all those salts, you're at a point that over the weekend and on winter days, it'll salt out. So don't go beyond that, but stay within 10%. And the ammonium bifluoride thing, the pH in literature is wrong. You will have to stay between 2.5 and 2.8. And there's no forgiving if you stray one way or the other. You'll pay the penalty in the quality of your plating. If it's low, add ammonium hydroxide to bring it back up again. And if it's high, more ammonium bifluoride. You've got to get in the range. Now, as I said before, the sodium fluoride is the brightener. It's left out of any of the published formulas. It was in the original system, and it is the grain refiner, it is the brightener, and if you use it, you'll get a classy act. Some of the things about using the tin nickel solution, you really don't need cathode rod agitation, not even, unless you're doing a lot of work, or unless you've not been very careful of maintaining your solution. I'm talking about stannic tin now. In which case, the only reason for the stannic, the agitation is to prevent anything from settling down, the shelf effect, as the platers will call it. And in the case of barrel plating, you want to immerse as far as you can because you don't want the turning barrel to aerate the solution. Again, the trouble being stannic tin any more than you have to. But my suggested method of fixing the solution, if you would, taking it out hot into a storage tank and pumping it back in when it's about 100 degrees, doesn't take long. It's a simple chore, a couple of 100-gallon solution. You can have it done in less than an hour's time, including cleaning up the filter. It's a good way to do it. Remember that the halogens you're working with, chlorine and fluorine, attack just about everything. Oh, bags, yes, all-on bags for the anodes. Oh, yeah, getting back to gold plating over or soldering over whatever. It's the same damn old routine that don't assume just because you went into a couple of rinse waters that you've got a clean surface. You don't. And I'm not talking about the arithmetic of rinsing and solutes. I'm talking about residual organics or precipitates such as stannic tin. So that after a couple of rinses, it was always, and after you've unloaded into a basket or while you're still on a rack, whatever's convenient, to go into a 10% hydrochloric and let it sit there for half a minute or so, or even less. The whole theme being that the stannic tin that precipitated in the rinse water, and you see it as a white cloud, well, some of it is on your work, undoubtedly, and that is very easy to dissolve while it still contains water, put it that way. You haven't dried it. You dehydrate the salt, my God, you need a boiling hydrochloric to get it off, but if you don't, 10% room temperature solution, just fine. Now, having removed any stannic tin, rinse, now you can go directly into a gold, and if you prefer, if you want to be wise about the whole thing, use a gold chloride strike. That's another subject, but it's a good one that I like very much. If you're into a cyanide gold, cathodic cyanide is just great. 4.5 volts, 30 seconds, beautiful. If you're into an acid gold, then if you're not going to do the gold chloride, go direct. But plate at your high current density range, and I never went more than 10 millionths of an inch because you certainly don't need to build gold thickness for corrosion resistance. The platform of tin nickel does that for you. So you only need it for solderability shelf life or for nice moving line, low contact resistant surface. It's great on moving line contact, by the way, rare kind of thing. That tin nickel platform is a more lubricious than an alloyed, an indium alloyed gold would be. And as for solderability, the only reason for more gold is protect from atmospheric corrosion, and that's certainly not your problem. I said 10 million, sorry, it's 7 millions. Yeah, that arithmetic means something in a language of solderability. And of course, the test is, and immediately after plating is the same as 5 years later, do a soldering operation. If the solder didn't ball up, in other words, de-wet for the tin nickel, you were successful even on a highly loaded moving line contact then, such as printed circuit connector tabs. I meant to do more exploring on that end of it, but I was busy enough in the tin nickel and getting the prices that I wanted, doing the kind of work I did without exploring to what would be, how can you say, somebody else's market. For me to do a whole lot of work for tin nickel as it would apply to printed circuit wouldn't put any money in my pocket because that's one kind of work I always refuse to do. The responsibility between the guy who did the resist and the guy who's going to do the inserting of parts, everybody's blaming everybody else. I don't need that. Oh, yeah. Stratification of the solution, all those salts, temperature differences, top to bottom. The routine was that when the operators got in the morning, it was a simple hole, you know, like in gardening. Move the solution or put the hole down about two-thirds of the way. Just pump back and forth a half a dozen times till you see the bottom come up, if I could use that expression. Then walk away. By the time he's gotten his work together, by the time he's got there, it's been a half hour anyway, and if there's anything that was floating around, it's heavy, would have settled off, and stratification was not a problem for the rest of the work day. I'm sure I left out a whole lot of details. If you want to talk to me, my phone number is 914-631-7891. Wait, I've got some PSs. Of course I would. One of them is that, remember I talked about that contact for the fluoborate strip plating where the anodes have to be under the strip? I said brass. No, no. I made that out of solid copper. I don't know why brass is such a habit. Now, a strange thing about safety, you know, remember how cautious I am about that hydrofluoric acid. Well, the fact that the 10-nickel solution is a hot solution is a benefit. And what I mean there is that if anything splashed on you, it hurts. So you rinse it off. If it didn't hurt, like in my case, you wouldn't know enough to rinse it off. Also, the sodium fluoride, I failed to mention, that's 2 ounces per gallon as makeup. And my kind of double talking about the solution formulation 10% thing, I mean, all the gobbledygook, hold it between 90% of makeup and 100% of makeup. Don't let it lose more than 10%. Have I got that right now? To finish off, I got to tell you a 10-nickel story, which is fun, if anything about plating can be fun. I had a phone call from an outfit in Canada. And the guy says, well, I'm the president of the company, and we make teapots just like General Electric Allentown does. He says, but we can't go to a stainless steel for a while. He says, what if you tin-nickel plated the whole teapot? Whoa, you know, first of all, I can see big full automatic plating machines. Not an easy thing to do because some of the designs require inside anodes for inside the pot. Then the chrome throw around the spot and around some of the handles is a pain in the tail, often with auxiliary anodes. So it's a very difficult part to nickel chrome plate. So I tell him, look, if we're going to do an experiment, why don't we go all the way? You nickel plate without inside anodes. And if brass is showing on the inside or is a demarcation line of impurity in the solution between the nickel plating and the brass, I said, leave it. Don't do anything. I said, but do to the nickel as you do to the chrome. If you fan it, then fan it. But give it to me. Yeah, they fanned it. So I said, okay, do that. And when you're all finished, just wrap them in tissue. Don't do anything fancy. And I'll take care of it from there. And you know, how much? I gave him a real steep minimum charge number. No problem, he says. He says, could you do it in blank, blank day? I said, well, okay, we'll line up for it. He says, okay, I'll see to it that they're, what time you open, 8 o'clock? He says, okay, I'll see to it that the parts are there at 8 o'clock in the morning. Sure and blazes, 8 o'clock in the morning, a big Cadillac chauffeur-driven limousine pulls up. And the guy introduces himself. He's not only the president of, I think it was called General Electric Canada, nothing to do with General Electric U.S. or General Electric England. And takes a couple of boxes of all sorts of coffee pots, teapots out of the trunk. And we discuss for a few minutes, and I said, okay, I'll do it, no problem. He says, well, what if I'm back tomorrow morning same time? Is it okay? I said, sure. Off he goes, and in the course of the day, a dozen or whatever it was, and I plated them, mind you. Since they're already nickel plated, I could immerse in the solution without current for a few seconds, and now I've reactivated my nickel. I don't need inside anodes because of the phenomenal throwing power. I don't need special racking to make them face the anode or anything like that. Whatever's easy rinsing. I don't have to worry about burning the tip of the spout, because it's such a flat plating that neither the tip of the spout will be burnt, and yet all of the inside of the pot is completely covered. Just rinse them. He said he was going to fan them. That was customary, after the 10 nickel, that is. So, quick rinse, wrap them up in tissue. Sure and hell, the next morning he's there at 8 o'clock. Boy, does he like what he sees. He said, look, he says, I got some more in the trunk. He said, would you do them, these two? And would you also scribble down how you do it? I said, well, that's going to cost you. He says, I don't care. He says, charge me what you will. And I thought to myself, you bet I will. Okay, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning? I said, fine. I had the parts ready, and I had a little outline on the plating procedure. He said if I had a very competent plating department so I could use their language, made it easy for me. And sure and hell, the next morning, he draws up checks, pays for all the minimum charges, pays for the consulting fee, and off he goes. Well, he wasn't around the corner when all the guys from the plant and the office surrounded me. So what the heck goes on? He said, he made us promise not to tell you. Tell me what? He said, well, he had some trotting horses running at Yonkers Raceway. And he gave us damn good tips. He said, we all bet on it for the first day, and we all hit good. He says, the second day, he gave us some more tips, and we played the ranch on it. Said, we gamble. He said, boy, he said, we made a lot of money. That's fine. They made a lot of money. All I did was work. I didn't get an extra penny for it. But it's a good 10-nickel story. I understand, in fact, as he called to tell me that he had switched all his production to it, and it was working phenomenally well. He had a stainless steel appearance on the outside. He had his completely plated inside with no inside anodes anyplace, no burning on the spout tips or handle tips. Then after fanning, he was right about this, is that yes, it fingerprints, but on such curved surfaces, it doesn't show. So, success for him, but not for me. Even my boss made out and getting paid those charges. I didn't get anything extra. I think I told you enough about 10-nickel. My phone number is 914-631-7891. If you want to talk, give me a call. I'll do a fast forward so the next guy playing this tape can start side one correctly. Don't you feel sorry for him?
That was Lou Morin in the final part of The Lost Art of 10-Nickel Plating. I am Fizz at finishing.com, saying so long until next time. Copyright 2006, finishing.com.